For anyone who has kids right now, for anyone who has ever raised kids at some point in their life, or quite frankly, for anybody who has just spent a lot of time with kids, I think there's one question that we ask our kids, it seems, more than any other. And it's not necessarily a question that we ask because we're, you know, like desperately looking for some answer per se, or that we're needing some kind of information that we don't have otherwise. I think this question that we ask kids so often is kind of a leading question in many ways. It's a question that we ask in an attempt to prompt our kids to respond in a manner that we would like them to, right? I have started to realize how often I ask my kids this question when someone, you know, gives them a gift or does something kind for them, or lately I've been catching myself doing this a whole lot. When I pick them up from the little kids area at the gym where I work out, like clockwork, every single time as we walk away, this same leading question comes out of my mouth. Anyone have any ideas what it is? I thought I might have heard it. Yeah. What do you say? I ask my, every day I leave, I pick them out, hey, Siggy man, what do you say, right? And when I really think about it, I actually cringe a little bit at how often this, like, kind of annoying sounding question comes out of my mouth, but maybe you've done it. I think we've all done it before. And ultimately, here is the answer that we are looking for. Thank you, right? Right? We want our kids to learn this important lesson. It's one of the two basics. It's one of the two biggies, really. There's please, and then there's thank you. And so we want to raise our kids to be kids, or to be teenagers, or to be adults who say thank you. If you think about it, do you ever find yourself emphasizing this kind of expected response in the lives of kids around you? Or maybe do you remember your parents working hard to get you to say thank you at all the right moments? Okay? I think we've all been there. And that's good. That's good, because what I want to suggest to you today is that whether we recognize it or not, saying thank you, I believe, has the potential to be so much more than just good manners. This type of response in our kids, quite frankly, this type of response in you and me and in the lives that we live every day, I think it actually has the potential to be so much more powerful than just being polite. And that's a little bit of what I want to explore for us today in the fourth and the final week of this series that is called First and Ten. If you have been with us for any part of this series, you know that it is not a series about football. It's actually just a series about life, about your life and my life. We have just borrowed some football terminology to describe where it is that we find ourselves at the beginning of a brand new year. In football terms, first and ten, it's a really, really good thing. It's about progress. It signals the progress. It signals a fresh set of downs and a new opportunity to begin moving the ball down the field. And that's really what the month of January is in many ways for you and for me. It's first down. It's first and 10 for us. It's providing us a fresh set of downs, a fresh start, and a brand new opportunity to be moving the ball down the field in the lives that we live, physically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally, or on down the line. And so in the final week of this series, I actually kind of want to finish where we started, in a sense, by examining yet another encounter that Jesus has with people who needed to get well. This is where we began, looking at some of these really pretty miraculous healing stories. And so I want to revisit another one today, another encounter that Jesus has with people who needed to get well, or people who were really just hoping and praying for someone or for something to come along that would help them move forward. And as we do examine this story today, I think that you and I are going to see that getting well, or that making progress, or that moving forward right now in life, it may come down. It very well may just come down to some form of those two words that we were taught to say so long ago. So if you will, turn your attention with me to Luke chapter 17, where all of this unfolds. This is what I want us to be looking at today. And I'm going to pick up reading for us right now in verse 11. It says this. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as he was going into a village, 10 men, remember that, 10 men who had leprosy, a nasty skin disease, met him. And they stood at a distance, it says, due to their skin disease. The law actually forbid them to mingle with others in societies. This is like the earliest documented form of social distancing right here in Luke chapter 17, okay? They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, it says, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. Okay, they stood at a distance, yet they still drew near to Jesus as he entered the village, which suggests that what they knew of Jesus, what they had heard of Jesus, told them that he was still approachable. And I just want to pause. This is not the main point today, but I just want to pause here really quickly to make sure that we don't miss that. I hope each and every one of us here today knows the very same thing, that no matter who you are, that no matter where you've been or what you've done or how many Bible verses you do or you don't know, I hope you know too that Jesus is approachable and that this place is a place for you to draw near to him, okay? These men believed that to be the case, and so that is what they do. They draw near and they call out, and here's how Jesus responds, verse 14. When he saw them, he said, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. Okay? So if we pause here quickly, again, we got to understand this. Jesus, we can't miss this, right? Jesus does the miraculous, and he cleanses them from this horrible skin disease. But if you look at it, there appears to be like a catch or a condition in a way. He says, go. Show yourselves to the priests. You see, ancient like Jewish and religious law required a priest to declare people truly clean, right? There was kind of misconceptions in that day that if you were sick or something, it's because there was something wrong with you or some sin that you had committed. So you could be kind of healed of this, but you had to have a priest that kind of said, yep, you're good to go. And so Jesus had miraculously rid them of this disease that had plagued them, but they had to obey Jesus' command to go present themselves to a priest before they were actually healed, right? So if you think about it, they were kind of only like halfway there, healed, but not necessarily whole, according to the religious customs and law of the day. They're on their way, but they haven't totally crossed the finish line yet. And it's what happens next that I really want us to pay very close attention to. Here's verse 15. One of them, when he saw that he was healed, when he looked down and when he realized that the sores and the lesions were gone from his hand, one of them came back, praising God in a loud voice, and he threw himself at Jesus' feet, and he what? And thanked him. I don't know if there was a mom or a dad nearby who asked the man, what do you say to Jesus? We don't know. Could be. Maybe not. But he came back. He walked away healed. But he came back. And he thanked Jesus for what he had done. And if that wasn't good enough, there's just another detail here that makes this even all the better. The text adds that this man, the one that came back, was a Samaritan. So this is kind of like a double whammy. The fact that he was a leper and that he was supposed to stay isolated from society, that was one thing. But the fact that he was a Samaritan was a completely other thing. Jews did not like Samaritans. I could get into all the cultural and religious reasons why, but for now, I'll just say that Samaritans were a highly offensive people group to the Jews. And so Jews were not to be like seen or associated with Samaritans. But Jesus was not fazed. In fact, he strikes up a conversation. Here's verse 17. Jesus asked, were not all 10 of you cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner. See, he realizes that he's talking to someone on the fringes. He realizes he's talking to someone outside of God's tribe here. And then he, Jesus, said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." Get up and go. Your faith has made you well. The Greek word here for made you well, it's actually the word sozo, which technically is kind of getting at the idea of you know, it means to save in kind of a spiritual sense, right? A spiritual healing and a spiritual forgiveness from the sin that ultimately separated all of humankind from God. So the 10 go away kind of halfway healed, right? Healed physically, but only one comes back, and he's healed physically and spiritually. Right? Jesus says, your faith has made you well. He's made whole. So the question is, what ultimately did it? What moved Jesus to just, boom, seal the deal right then and right there for this man? I mean, we know for sure that it wasn't his reputation as a Samaritan. It wasn't, you know, some other kind of, you know, spiritual resume that he had or some kind of boxes that he had already checked. And yet Jesus says that it was his faith that made him well. So what was the physical evidence of his faith that we see playing out? It was his gratitude. It was a thankful heart. What did he do? He came back and he threw himself at the feet of Jesus and thanked him. Folks, it's still January of 2022, which means for you and me, it's first and 10 as well. And it means we still have an opportunity to get off on the right foot. And we have an opportunity still to make progress, to move ahead, to get well in some area of our life and to be made whole. And what this story teaches us and what this story teaches me is this, that it's Thanksgiving that makes you whole. What we see here is that it's Thanksgiving that makes you whole. And no, I'm not talking about the day in November that, you know, we celebrate by eating more food in one day than we do the rest of the week. I'm talking about Thanksgiving in terms of a thankful heart. A heart and a posture and a condition inside of us of perpetual gratitude. See, what we see playing out before us here is the type of heart condition that I think maybe, just possibly is missing in you and missing is me. I can't help but wonder how many of us maybe right now are walking around healed but not necessarily whole. I can't help but wonder how many of us are, in a sense, we're walking but we're not running. Right, we're surviving, but we're not necessarily thriving. We're doing just fine, but we're not really ever crossing over the goal line. We're getting by, but we're not really getting ahead. Or we're moving on, but we're never really moving forward, in a sense, in some area of our life that matters. I just wonder if Thanksgiving, as kind of trite, as kind of elementary as it might seem, I just wonder when I read this story, I wonder if it's Thanksgiving, a thankful heart that might be the missing puzzle piece to making progress and to getting well and to moving forward this year. Truthfully, friends, Christians were really great at quiet time. If you think about it, Christians were really great at quiet time. We kind of boast about our devotional life and we Instagram a cup of coffee next to an open Bible or we got some religious podcast that we're listening to, and that's all really good. We should be building those practices into our life. Christians were good at the quiet time game, but I think we need to up our Thanksgiving game just a little bit. I think we need to expand and to increase the moments in our lives when we give praise and when we give thanks to the author and to the creator and to the sustainer of the lives that we live. I think it's a commitment, it's a decision right now to this kind of thanksgiving that is going to make us whole. In our praise and our thanksgiving to God, it is certainly not limited to what we do here, but in many ways, I think it can start here. I mean, every Sunday you can bank on 15 minutes designed for us to express thanksgiving to God through music. It's a pivotal portion of our week. I love some of the songs that we sing here. That one of them says our weapon is a melody. The one that we just sang here today, I didn't even see it coming. It said, the gates of hell will tremble when the church begins to sing. I love that. These moments, it starts right here. And yet at the very same time, I can't tell you how often I'll hear as I connect with people. I can't tell you how often I hear, I don't really like to sing. Or, my husband doesn't really like to sing. Or, I don't know. I don't really do the singing. I'll be honest with you. I get it. Right? Sometimes I don't always either. Right? For a lot of people walking through the doors of this place, it's kind of weird. If you're new to this deal, it's kind of weird. Right? Yeah. It's not always supernatural or comfortable sometimes to stand and sing these songs. I get it. But here's the deal. We're not going to stop. We're not going to stop making that a foundation of what we do here. And here's why. Here's what those moments are meant for. Those moments are meant to be a built-in time and a built-in rhythm into our lives to do this thing that I think makes us whole. It's a built-in time into our lives for us to continually come back to the feet of Jesus and to give thanks in a way that I think could be the difference maker. And to do so with someone who sounds as good as Brian, right? And in a room that's loud enough that you can't even hear yourself sing. And trust me, I've sat in church long enough in my life to know that some of you don't want to hear yourselves sing, okay? And so if this kind of Thanksgiving is really that game-changing, then you got to take advantage of this opportunity that we create here as much as you can, okay? But truthfully, I get this. It's not just music. It starts there. That's an important time that we can build into our lives, but it's not just music, right? We can have a thankful heart, and we can have a heart of gratitude without music, right? Because at the end of the day, here's all that Thanksgiving really is. Thanksgiving is right remembering. It's right remembering. It's remembering more often, at more times, and in more places, and in more moments in our lives, who we are, where we came from, how we got here, who put food on our table, who put a heartbeat inside of us, who put breath in our lungs, and who put potential in our lives. It's going back. Not back to the past, not back to mistakes, not back to the pain or back to the failure. It's going back to the feet of Jesus more often, at more times, at more places, at more moments in our lives. It's going back to the feet of Jesus to say, thank you. Thank you for what I have. Thank you for where I've been. Thank you for how it is that you have blessed me. Thank you for who it is, God, that you have put around me. Thanks for the skills and for the abilities that you have given me. Thanks for the opportunities that you have put in front of me. Thanks for the doors that you've opened for me. Thanks for the doors that you closed for me. Because otherwise, I might have walked through them, and that's not the door you wanted me to be walking through. Thanks for the pain that you healed me from. Thanks for the disaster that I may not have even known about that you protected me from. Thanks for the places that you've pulled me from, and thanks for the places that you've drawn me to. Thank you for you fill in the gap. See, I think that this is a really powerful way to go through life. I said, it seems kind of trite. It seems kind of just like, oh, yeah, whatever. I think it's a powerful way to go through life, working diligently to bring all things back to the feet of Jesus in gratitude, actively working hard to find things in life to say thank you for. It's powerful. Erica and I, we're trying to do this. We're trying to model this for our kids as best we can, right? If I pull back the curtain on the Carlson house right now, everything for our kids right now is just a little season we're in. Everything for our three kids right now, it's not good, it's not enough, it's not good enough, it's not right, or it's not fair, and I think Erica and I might lose our minds if we hear this kind of stuff for too much longer. And so just this past week, and I don't know, this is maybe a silly or, you know, maybe too narrow an example here, but I'm just trying to help bring this to life a little bit for you. So just last week, Eric and I called a major timeout, called a major family meeting in response to a pretty explosive, not fair moment in our house. Our daughter Lucy, she was born with a cataract in her left eye. And so at 5 weeks old, she had surgery to have the cataract removed and to ultimately have her eye lens removed as well. And so ever since she was 5 weeks old, she wears a contact in her one eye, right? As a baby, we had to get it in and get it out. She does that whole deal on her own now. She had to wear an eye patch for the majority of the first 6 or 7 years of her life. And now she makes regular visits to Mayo Clinic all the way down in Rochester, Minnesota. And it's been a ride for us for these 8 years. And so she had an appointment just this last week. And so Erica was going to take her out of school and drive her down to Mayo Clinic. And it really becomes kind of an all-day thing. And when we told our son, Ollie, that he would be riding the bus home from school on his own, he freaked out. That's not fair. Lucy always, and I never, and Mom, you always. And the dude just lost it. And I think Erica and I were both about this close to throwing him out the window because we could not handle it any longer. It was just the pinnacle of just weeks of this not fair stuff. And so we called a little family timeout. We called a little family meeting. I'm kidding you not, this was just days ago. We all huddled around the kitchen island and we said, look, gang, we have got to turn some things around, right? We turned to Erica, we turned to Ollie, and Erica kind of kicked things off. And she said, hey, man, I know that it's a bummer that you're going to be riding home alone. And I'm so sorry for that. But what if instead, okay, pay attention to this for where this could happen in your own life. She said, what if instead you said, man, I'm so glad my sister gets to go to the doctor. What if you said, thank God for the care that she has received for all these years. Thank you, God, that Lucy gets to see some of the best doctors in the world. Thank you, God, for science and for technology that has literally put sight back into my sister's eye. Now, those might have been some mature thoughts for him to conjure up on his own. But we want to try to make this shift in our lives. We are trying to cultivate hearts of gratitude and thanksgiving in our family. We want to be a family that comes back to the feet of Jesus to say thank you as often as we can. Not because it's polite, and not because it's proper, and not because it's the thing that Jesus would probably want us to do, but because when it becomes ingrained into the rhythm and into the fabric of our life, I think it has the ability and the potential to make us whole. And so the question I want to ask you today is, where is it? Where is it that you maybe need to come back to say thanks to Jesus? How is it that you would express, how is it that you will express thanks in your life to Jesus? What is it that you need to say thanks to Jesus for? Is it a person? Is it a blessing? Is it an opportunity that you never stop to give thanks to God for? Is it a spouse? Or is it a kid? Or is it a friend? Or is it a teacher? Or is it a boss? Or is it a mentor that you never connected the dots before? You never stopped long enough to see them as a gift from God to you? Is it something else, right? Is it a moment? Is it a thing? Is it a word? Is it something that you need to stop, that you need to come back, and that you need to give thanks for? Folks, let's be people, right? Let's be individuals, let's be marriages, and let's be families, and let's be a church that comes back. Let's be a church who constantly goes back to the feet of Jesus. I mean, what if our praise, what if our thanksgiving inside these four walls and outside, what if it really was the key to being made whole and to getting well this year? What if it was the key, this kind of thanksgiving, this kind of condition in our heart? What if it was the key to God's biggest plans for us? What if it was the key to the marriages that we long for, to the families that we dream of? What if it was the key for us to cross the finish line and to move into the new home that God is preparing for us? What if it was the key to seeing more people walk through these doors and to reaching more people for Jesus and to seeing more people set free or seeing more people inspired and empowered and equipped to be the men and to be the women that God created them to be? What if our weapon this year was a melody, or a song, or a prayer, or just a thankful heart? Could make all the difference in the world. So let's remember rightly this year. Let's come back to the feet of Jesus as often as we can, because it might be the very thing that helps us to move forward. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks for this chance to rightly remember here today. God, it's not limited to these moments, but our thanks and our praise to you certainly does start here, God, in these moments that we carve out to say thanks to you. And so, God, I don't know where everybody is at today, and I don't know what's going on in life. I don't know what parts of life or family or marriage or career or whatever. I don't know what parts of it might feel kind of healed but not whole, God. But I trust that there are some areas of our lives where we're kind of moving somewhere but maybe not moving forward. And so, God, wherever that is, I pray that you would maybe help us to discover that place in our life so that we could do something about it, God. And although it seems trite, and although it seems kind of just like, yeah, you know, whatever, that sounds good, let's, you know, please and thank you and all that stuff, God, would you help us to develop hearts? God, would you help us to make a shift in our life and the way that we evaluate life and look at life and see life? God, would you help us to be people who look for more ways to come back and to say thank you for what it is that you have done? God, I think working hard to find things to be grateful for in life, I really do think that it could be the difference maker. God, I really do believe that the gates of hell will tremble when the church begins to sing. So God, here on Sundays, in our lives, in our workplaces, in our homes, would you help our lives to be singing of our thanks and our praise to you? And we pray this in your name. The truth is, Jesus actually instructed us to do some of this kind of right remembering in our own lives, which is good news for us because we need help at times doing this kind of right remembering. It was actually the night before Jesus was betrayed that he got all his closest buddies in the same room, and he invited him around a table, and he took bread and he took a cup and he kind of held it out in front of them and to say, hey, as often as you guys do this, right, every time you come back and do this deal here, every time you break bread and every time you pour out this cup, what'd he say? Remember me. Remember what it is that I have done for you. Remember the love that I have for you. Remember the price that I paid for you. And so we have an opportunity here today to close out this time together by doing right now some of that right remembering, right? And it's the moment we're going to invite you to come forward here and to grab one of these that has, you know, what's represented as the body that was broken and the blood that was poured out for you. And the invitation to you and to me is the very same thing, to do this, to eat this bread and to drink this cup as a way to remember what it is that Jesus has done for us, right? This thing that we call communion or the Lord's Supper, it is our opportunity to come back to the feet of Jesus and to say thank you. And so I'm gonna bring this out in front of me here and say a word of prayer, and then I'm going to invite you to stand, to come down the center aisle, to grab one of these and to participate on your own at whatever timing you need to do that. But I'm going to invite you to take this bread and to take this cup and to come back to the feet of Jesus, to remember rightly what it is that he has done for you. Let me pray. God, thank you for your amazing love for us. Thank you for the gift of your son, Jesus, a gift that we did not deserve, but that you gave to us anyway, God. And I pray in these moments right here, God, that you might help remind us of what it is that you have done for us, that you might remind us in a way that we need to hear of your love for us. God, would you be present in these moments that we turn our hearts and our attention back to you. We pray this